Judges are supposed to be impartial. Now, because they're human beings, they occasionally bring their own thoughts and maybe even biases to a case every now and then. Supreme Court justices can be affected by that as well. They're selected and approved by politicians, after all. But a recent paper put together by law professors Tanya Jacoby of Northwestern University and Matthew Sagg of Loyola University says the issue of justices acting as advocates is a growing trend. The paper, published in the Notre Dame Law Review, is titled The New Oral Argument, Justices as Advocates. And Professor Jacoby is with me to talk about her findings. Professor, what did you find when you were trying to figure out whether recent Supreme Court justices were acting differently during oral arguments than their predecessors?
Yes, so there's a lot of evidence prior to this that the court is political and that judicial behavior is predictable based on ideology. So if you're appointed by a Democrat, you're more likely to vote liberal. If you're appointed by a Republican, you're more likely to vote conservative. But what we see, what I noticed at oral argument is that it wasn't just that the judges were being political, but they were being political in a particular way, and they were actively advocating for a particular side of an argument. And so that seemed to me slightly different in that it suggested that the justices weren't coming to cases in a sort of neutral, objective fashion without having predetermined the decision, and that they were actually sort of trying to help one side over another. And this seemed quite different. Also, that the justices were being extremely active, talking a lot more at oral argument than they used to.
There is a feeling that it's not just that they're talking more, but they're making statements as opposed to asking questions more.
That's right. So we measured the extent to which they're asking questions compared to making comments, and we found that the justices are taking up a lot more time at oral argument. Of a 60-minute oral argument, they spend about 13 minutes more time talking than they used to. So they've always talked, and so they're taking up almost a quarter more of the oral argument than they used to. But they aren't actually asking any more questions. So this idea of the judges undertaking these inquiries of the advocates and quizzing them on difficult questions wasn't really increasing at all. That wasn't accounting for the extra time. Rather, it was the justices making comments, coming to conclusions, putting statements to the advocates.
Were they saying, were they making statements that were, let's say, toward the side they were leaning, or were they more likely to make statements that were harder on the side to which they seemed to be opposed?
So we found that the justices talk more generally during the time of the advocate who they ultimately rule against. And furthermore, that the type of comments that they make are different depending on who they rule for or against ultimately. So the comments were particularly increasing when they were talking to the advocate who they ultimately disfavored.
I'm especially interested in the conclusion that you drew as to when this particular era started, when you first started seeing a shift to this more advocacy sort of performance. And you draw a pretty firm line here.
Yes, so we looked at before and after 1995, and the reason we were looking at that time is in 1994, the Republican Revolution election occurred where a lot of freshman Republicans came into the House, Newt Gingrich brought in the Contract with America, and polarization really started to pick up, political polarization, the distance between the parties, the extremism of each party, and that came to be reflected in public opinion as well, that people saw people who were politically opposed to them as bad people who didn't want the best for the country. There was this huge divide between Democrats and Republicans. We saw that in Congress, that Democrats and Republicans stopped voting together. There were party line votes on nominations. There were party line votes on legislation. And the ideological distance between the parties grew greater and greater. And it led to this sort of atmosphere that we have now of great conflict between people of different parties. And I thought, I bet that might be driving what's going on at the court, because the court is made up of justices who are highly educated, active members of society at the elite level, and those people are the type who are most likely to express the same sort of polarized views as members of Congress do. And sure enough, we saw that they were behaving in this quite partisan manner, and that was reflected in their behavior at oral argument.
But Professor, aren't we taught that because it's a lifetime appointment, we shouldn't expect these justices to be affected that way? What does that say to you, that they are affected by that?
I mean, to me, it's concerning because it does really take us away from the role of the justice as objective and coming to a case without a predetermined position and not putting their thumb on the scale. Now, the idealized notion of the judge we know is not true. We know that judges are political, that they're nominated by political actors, so it's not surprising that they're political to some extent. But we normally like to think that judges are different to politicians. We give them life tenure. We allow them to interpret the Constitution because they are different to politicians. And I'm not saying that they're not showing the same level of partisanship as politicians, but nonetheless, they are behaving a lot more like politicians than we like to think of judges as behaving.
Are there a couple of examples you could cite for us that listeners can relate to, some higher profile cases that really give us a vivid light in terms of what you're talking about?
Oh, sure. So one of my favorite examples, because it was sort of a little bit of a slip, I think, by the justice, is the case of Dean v. United States, which was about, it was a criminal case about imposing mandatory consecutive minimum sentences on a defendant. And Justice Sotomayor had been really making a lot of questions and comments that were really clearly trying to help an advocate out. He was struggling a little bit, not doing the greatest job, and so she was asking him these leading questions, trying to get him to a particular position. And then a few minutes later, the advocate, Alan Stoler, he confused Justice Kagan and Justice Sotomayor, which I've actually heard happen a few times with the female justices. And Justice Kagan said to the advocate, she said, "I'm Justice Kagan, she's Justice Sotomayor, she's the one who was trying to help you." And so there you have an actual explicit statement by the justices, and that's fairly rare. They pretend they're not doing this. But it was sort of a moment of truth, which was a fun one.
Tanya Jacoby is a law professor at Northwestern University. We've been talking about the paper she co-wrote called The New Oral Argument: Justices as Advocates.